like to have in front of you 1 Kings 17, particularly the second part of our reading from verses 8 to 16. I'll try and put across in the same way that I tried to with the boys this tremendously important subject of putting God first in life. Now, some of us at least agreed in the Bible Club this afternoon that if you put God first before yourself, you never lose anything. But you gain a tremendous amount that you could never have dreamed of if you had not put God first. It's natural to human nature to grab for self first, to say me first, and never know what you missed. But if against that natural inclination, by the Spirit working in us, we put God first, we find that we gain beyond anything we demanded. And I want to think about that a little bit tonight from 1 Kings 17 and particularly verse 13. I'm going to change the order of the words very slightly because I think the emphasis is greater into what we have in the Authorized Version, just three of the words. And Elijah said to her, "Fear not, go and do as you have said, but make me first a little cake of it and bring it to me, and afterward make for yourself and your son. Make me first and afterward yourself and your son." I think we know this story. We've learnt it from our Sunday school days. It was a terrible time in Israel. There was this wickedest of wicked kings, Ahab, egged on by his worst wife, Jezebel. The people had, under the influence largely of the king and queen, had turned from God to the heathen god Baal. Very few were left in the land, comparatively, who were true to God. And those who were true to God were either sought out and killed or had to go underground and hide themselves. And in the middle of all this, God picks out his man, Elijah, his messenger, and he sends him to face the wicked king Ahab. And he faces Ahab and he prophesies in Ahab's presence that there is going to be a drought upon the land. And after that, he goes at God's command into hiding. Well, the prophecy comes true, as we know. Months pass, there's no rain, the brooks are drying up, the grass and the crops are withering, the cattle is dying, there's a near famine in the land, and many of the people, as well as the animals, are facing starvation. God leads Elijah to Cherith, the brook, sees that he's supplied with food in the way that we heard in our reading, and then the brook dries up. And then the word of the Lord comes to him and says, "Arise and go to Zarephath, which belongs to Zidon, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow. I have commanded a widow there to feed you." Now here's the most important thing, I think, that we need to learn as Christians. I know that young Christians need to learn it, but I think older people often forget it, slip away from it, or somehow think that after they get to a certain age they don't need to put it into practice anymore. And that is that we must learn to put God and his service first. And with God, first means first. I've said this to boys in various contexts, and they wonder if it's all right to do this, and all right to do that, and push God's work aside for this, and push God's work aside from that. I say, with God, first means first. Well, then, if I put God first, I may miss getting this, I may miss doing that, I may not pass that exam, I may do this thing and so on. Well, that's his lookout, if I may say it briefly. When God says first, he means first. And if we obey him literally in putting him first, then he will see to it that we never lose. But every time infallibly, we'll gain. don't usually learn this lesson all at once. I don't suppose anybody ever does. But it's a good thing for a young Christian to begin learning it early in life and to take every chance of learning it more and more. And it's really a matter of practice. And if we don't know more now about putting God first than we did when we started the Christian life, then we may doubt whether we're making progress as a Christian. But one of the marks of growth in a Christian life, with a young Christian particularly, it seems to me, I've had more occasion perhaps to observe them, is that they begin more and more to count that God's work must come absolutely first. And all the incidental things, the things that seem quite nice, the things that, well, you've been to that Bible class 6 Sundays this term, this is only one Sunday we're talking about, or you've been to church every Sunday for a long time, we're only mentioning one. All those sort of things, don't touch them anymore. They know that if first means first one week, it means first the next week. And it'll go on meaning first right the way on all through their life. They're not taken in by the deceptions of their heart, of the devil, of the world, or even sometimes, I'm afraid, of Christians themselves. Now, this story is an example of what I think is a wonderful thing about the Bible. That although not far short of 3,000 years has passed since this story that we read came to pass, although it's about people who lived in very different circumstances from our own today, it has things in it that exactly fit into our lives thousands of years later on. The principles, to use the word which I'm fond of, the principles abide, they remain. And this is a story about someone who learned to put God and his service and his servant, and remember, nearly always the two go together. If you're putting God's servant first, you're putting his service first. This is a story about someone who learned to put God and his service and his servant first. Now that word first comes in that verse 13, make me first. Now this woman did just that. She put God's servant first, and the result was the wonderful thing, the wonderful miracle that we read about in our story. I want to be as simple as anything and ask you this very simple question, not in the light of your emotional feelings, but in the light of your actual practice within the last week or fortnight. Are you learning to put God and his service absolutely first? Am I? Now here's a test, a simple test. I seem to remember that I may have said something like this in quite a different connection a few weeks ago. I can't remember what it was, but it seems to ring a bell somewhere at the back of my mind. A test is something like this. When you're wondering whether you're going to do something or not, what do you think of first with regard to that particular action that you are thinking of taking? Are you thinking first, do I want to do it? What would I get out of it? Would I enjoy it? And so on. Or is my thought, would this help God's work? Or would this hinder God's work? Has God given me this thing to enjoy? And if he has he given it to me to enjoy it now, this particular moment? Or is it that, am I taking one of God's gifts in the wrong place? All these things are the way that we should think if we want to put God first. Will it help other Christians? Or will it make it harder for other Christians? And so on. Now what is at the back of our mind, or on the top of our mind, it might be better to say, because what comes first to our mind is probably the thing that is deepest, which sounds strange, but I think it's true. Now in deciding what you're going to do in certain circumstances, do you put first your things or God's things? To put it very childishly. If you're a Christian, you have a choice of putting your things first or God's things first. against this business of having acrostics based on the first letters of words, unless they're absolutely natural and they flow out of the context of what you're talking about. And I found that the word first just did that. With this woman, as with you and me, it was a question of whether she would put first her feelings or God's faithfulness. It was a question as to whether she would put her interests or God's instruction. It was a question of whether she put her relationships or God's resources. It was a question as to whether she would put her safety, security, or God's service. It was a question as to whether she would consider first her troubles or God's time. Now, if she had not put God first, perhaps it's worthwhile just saying this because it applies to us, these are the things that would have happened. First, she would have disobeyed God because he had commanded her to sustain Elijah. And Elijah, in the name of the Lord, had said, make me first. Therefore, once she had made the cake for herself and her son, she'd have had nothing left for his servant. And if we put ourselves first in anything, we soon have nothing left for God. She'd have missed the chance of serving God. She'd have hindered his work, for she was his provision for the key man in the nation at that time. She'd have harmed his people, because it was through Elijah that the blessing was going to come to the people. And she would probably have been responsible for the death of her son and herself, because she said, we've just got enough to have a last little meal and then die. Now, if we don't put God first, that is the sort of thing, applying the principles to our time and our way of living, that happens. It's possible for the Christian life more or less to die out, and also to die out of others to whom you might have brought life. Now just let's think, as we finish, of these words I gave you. She put her feelings, she put God's faithfulness before her feelings. What were her feelings? Well, a feeling of tremendous hunger, a feeling that she hadn't got enough for the prophet. We tend to try to live a lot of our Christian life on our feelings, as if our feelings were resources that are going to last. Of course they're not. When it's a matter of backing up some work of God, perhaps going to some service, I mean, one could take so many illustrations that I just take the first that come to mind. Oh, I don't really feel like it today. I don't think I'll go to church tonight. I don't feel I'd do this. Oh, I don't think I'll do that. I don't feel I'd do any good. I'm talking of things in which you know that to do that would be God's way. Now, those are feelings. And if she'd acted on her feelings of terrible hunger and this tiny little bit of food, she would have disobeyed God, and she would have forgot all about his faithfulness. What about his faithfulness? Well, she had a promise from God through Elijah. Thus says the Lord God of Israel, the jar of meal shall not be spent, and the cruse of oil shall not fail until the day that the Lord sends rain upon the earth. Now there were her feelings of hunger, impotence, weakness, going down to death. Here was the sure, faithful promise of God that if you will put my servant first, that oil will never fail until rain comes once more and there's plenty on the earth. And she banked everything, not on her feelings, but on the faithfulness of God. She reckoned on God being faithful to his promise. She put his faithfulness before her feelings. She put God first. And the meaning for us, I think, is quite obvious. The Bible is full of promises that those who put God first will never lose anything worth having, but gain a tremendous amount that they never expected to gain. And just think of it, if God has been so faithful to us, should we not be faithful to him and not let him down because of our feelings? Prepare to put God first. Say no to your feelings and yes to his faithfulness. Then she refused to put her interests first. What does interest mean in that connection? Well, it means your advantage, the things you hope to gain, your happiness, your pleasure, perhaps in your life, praise, applause, satisfaction, freedom, being accepted in a certain set of people. For her, it meant to feed herself and her boy, to keep alive, if possible, with the little that she had left. Now, in order to put God first, we have to refuse to put ourselves first. The things we get advantage from, or think we will, the pleasures that seem so important and are quite right in their place, but not first. The occupations which are perfectly legitimate in their place, but not in their foot first. Games, outings, hobbies, comfort, self-will in any form. Not to put them first. They are our interests. And instead of that, she put God's instructions first. What were God's instructions? That she should feed him, God's servant. What were God's instructions? Verse 13, make me first a little cake and bring it to me, and afterward yourself and your son. And she turned her back upon her own interests, and she did what Jesus asks of every one of us who says he's a Christian or she's a Christian, ask just one thing, that we should put him first and afterward ourselves and our interests. He gives us many things to enjoy, and we give him tremendous joy when we enjoy them, but on one condition, that he and his service shall come first. Don't think of God as someone who doesn't want us to enjoy anything. He gives us all things richly to enjoy, so long as we enjoy them as his gifts and in the place of his service and put him first. And if our interests clash with his commands, then we have a chance to prove that we rarely have put God first. I'm not talking necessarily about great big things. Maybe in some quite small thing in life. Some small selfishness that no one else would know about but yourself. And you know that you could either have helped someone else in the name of the Lord or taken a bit of comfort or something so as not to help them. And you put yourself first. God wants us to put his instructions first. If we don't, well, he's sad. He never forces us. And we lose more than we will ever know, and we gain nothing. I put that in capital letters and underline it. Nothing. Now, she chose to put God's instructions before her interests, and she gained more than she could ever have dreamed possible. Now, what about you and me? We prepare to put it to the test? Is God speaking to you about one particular thing in your life in which you could put this to the test? May seem a small thing, which you've been stubborn against him. Try it out, see whether you don't get it. She could have put her relationships first. Relationships mean, of course, the people who are specially connected with us in our lives. Perhaps our families, perhaps our friends, perhaps a particular circle that we have at school or at college or in society. And hers was specially her son. Yours may be, if you're a youngster, your parents, your friends, special girl or boy friends. The temptation will be to put them first, before God and his things. And what God is wanting, wanting us to do is put his resources first. What do resources mean? Why, supplies. Just as simple as that. And she believed that God's supplies were enough for all their needs. And if she put God first, he would look after all her relationships. And the chief relationship in this connection was the son. Don't you be afraid if you're trying to cling on to some relationship, some friendship, that somehow you've got to put God second in order to cling on to it. It won't be worth having if you get it outside of God. But if God seems to be taking it away and you say, Lord, even if it breaks my heart, I'm going to put you first, you may be amazed that you'll find it back, given back like Isaac from the dead, renewed, touched with the touch of God, spiritual as it would never have been without God. And you'll have it because you put his resources before your relationship. Now God has supplies that will more than make up for anything that we may seem to lose by putting him first in every relationship with other people. I know that parents must be obeyed. But, there is a but, and I've had parents to recognize it too. The but is not if their authority goes against the authority of God. Friends, we should be faithful to them, but not if being faithful to them makes us unfaithful to God. And if we're to be true, happy, useful Christians, discovering more and more of the wonderful ways that God has for us, we must put him absolutely first. Jesus said what may sound a very stern and hard thing, but from the lips of love incarnate, it's not stern or hard. He said, he that loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Why? Why, it's a paradox, really, that if you love your father or mother more than Jesus, you don't really love them more than Jesus. Because you're not giving them a chance to give him a bigger blessing than you could ever give them. You see what I mean? And then she might have put her safety first. And her safety, of course, lay in not dying from starvation. Your safety, you may feel, depends upon getting rid of discomfort, persecution, embarrassment, loneliness, bondage, anything that takes away the sense of security in your life. And it's different with different people, but we're more or less made the same and they come under the same category. And we try to hedge ourselves around and make ourselves secure in certain relationships and in certain situation. But God says, no, let me look after your security. You be prepared to let your security go into my hands. I want you to put my service absolutely first. And what did it mean for her? Giving Elijah everything he needed, and she had pretty well nothing left. Yours may be to put your church absolutely first. It may be to put some work God has given you absolutely first. It may be to put some individual who God has put within your care and asked you to pray for and help along the way absolutely first. I don't know. I can't tell you. It may be to put your Bible class first. Backing up the work of God with absolutely everything in you first. And then letting God look after your security. But if I did that on Sunday afternoon, I wouldn't be able to get my usual sleep, and then I'd be terribly tired during the week. Oh, I wish I could take you to what I've had the privilege of going to so often in my life, and that is a conference of leaders of the Crusaders Union, which is the Union of Bible Classes, which many of you know about. And I don't think you can get a more wonderful spiritual gathering of businessmen and professional men than you can get, all Christians, at a Crusader Leaders Conference. Many a time I've been, sometimes privileged of speaking to them. And I thought to myself, here are men who are absolutely up to the eyes and sometimes over the top of the head in business commitments, and yet every Sunday afternoon they're there at their Bible class to teach their boys. Talk about your snooze on Sunday afternoon. Anybody deserves it, those men do, but they don't think about it. Nothing. Some of them go miles and miles and miles to fetch one boy in order that that boy may be brought within sound of the gospel and hear about the Lord Jesus Christ. And they give their weeknights and weekdays up too. Now, I'm not speaking only about them, but they came to my mind as I was speaking. There are many others like them. What would they say? We've lost our security? No, they'd say we've gained beyond everything. Look at their faces. Look at them as the boys whom they've led to Christ greet them when they've grown to be men. Smile upon them, even sometimes call them father. Some of you remember Mr. Montague Goodman, the good old days. I remember seeing a boy, well, he was a young man, coming up to Monty Goodman once at a conference, and he said, hello, father. And Monty Goodman said, who are you, my son? And he was one whom Monty had led to Christ years ago, and he was greeting him as his spiritual father. Gain, security, who wants security? When the service of God brings rich reward like that. And finally, she refused to let her troubles push out God's particular time, which had come for her to do what he asked her to do. What were her troubles? Well, they were many. She'd lost her husband. She was short of money. She was short of food. Her son was likely to die of starvation, let alone her household, which is mentioned, and herself. You can imagine her saying, fancy expecting me to do anything to help God's servant at a time like this. I've enough troubles on my own. I can't take on any more. Some other time when things are easier, but not now. What about your troubles? I said to the boys when I spoke to them, I know there are enough troubles in everyday life when you're at school. Some people say, school days, best days of your life, my boy, make the most of them. And up and on. So far, I had more troubles at school than I had all the rest of my life put together. I never remember a day when I didn't wake up feeling there was some trouble, and if there wasn't, well, it was a blessed day. You may say, well, they were very small things. They're not small to you when you're that age. So far, they're much bigger than they are when you are mature and you've been able to come to terms with life. And what about your troubles? Well, there are people here I know with many troubles. Some of them are known to us. Some of them are known to their nearest friends. Some of them are kept quite secret and hidden away in their hearts. And are you feeling, well, I can't possibly do anything for God just now? Yes, it seems as if his time has come, but I'm afraid I don't think he really realizes all my troubles. Some other time when I've got rid of my troubles. But this was God's time for her to serve him. This, the time of her worst trouble. He came to her. Out of all the rest of the people in Israel. And if she said, no, not now, perhaps she'd have stopped and said, well, the chance won't come again. And God didn't let her forget. And I believe she realized right there in the middle of her troubles that somehow, if she was obedient to God, it would have an effect on those troubles of hers. And so she put God's time first and found that all her troubles were settled, every one of them. You know, to say that you've got too many troubles to put God first is like saying that you're too ill to go to the doctor, you must wait until you're better. Stupid, isn't it? Have you got too many troubles to put God first? If you've got too many troubles, then not to put God first. It's your only way through. So if in the middle of troubles that seem to be absolutely weighing you down, God is asking you for something that seems like the last straw, well, let him put on the last straw. And if you're a camel, it won't break your back. It won't break your back anyhow. It will be the open way into all his marvelous resources, and you'll find that God always does things so to speak upside down. That's how the apostles were described. These that have turned the world upside down have come here also. It's by putting the last straw upon us. God is able, so to speak, to bring us to the point where we are open to receive every blessing he has for us. And if you put God and his work first, it's just amazing how you'll find those troubles would be solved for you. So let's leave it there with this thought. God is speaking to us tonight in the context of our own life, our own hearts, our own experience, what we know about ourselves, and he is saying to you, see if I don't come and give you a blessing beyond anything that you've ever dreamed of before. And if you will respond to God, I can assure you of this, he will be utterly and absolutely.